I'm Duncan MacLeod. Welcome to episode 2 of Meet the CIO, the new monthly show from Tech Central, where we talk not to technology vendors, but rather to the end users of IT, the big banks, retailers, manufacturers, and other companies, about how they're using modern technology to power their businesses. Meet the CIO is proudly presented by Wipro, and we thank the team at Wipro for helping bring you this exciting interview series. You can learn more about Wipro at wipro.com. Now, our second ever guest on Meet the CIO is Shabana Teva. Shabana is Chief Information Officer at Investec. Shabana, thanks for making the time and welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Shabana, tell me a bit about yourself. You've been with Investec, I think, according to your LinkedIn profile, since about 2008.
Yes.
But you started your career as a software developer, I think, for Smartcall, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. What language were you coding in?
Well, back then I was coding in .NET. Today I don't code anymore, So I do miss it. But I think there's a bit of a story behind how I got into software development, and okay. It's a very simple story. I was in 1996, I was actually choosing my subjects for high school. I am giving away my age, but that's okay.
Younger than me.
So I was choosing my subjects, and mm-hmm. I went home and I spoke to my dad, and I was like, Dad, I want to do computer science. All right, so it's S7. English, Afrikaans, mathematics, biophysics, and I want to do computer science. And my dad was just like, okay, let's talk about this. Shouldn't you be doing accounting? And then I said, no, I want to do computer science. And my dad's only ask was that he wanted me to be an independent woman. Mm-hmm. He grew up in tough times, and that's all he ever wanted for his children, and not have any reliance. So he supported the conversation. I did computer science in high school. I did a BSc in Comp Science in university. I did an honors cum laude in university. I tried to find a job. Couldn't really get a job, even though I had a cum laude in honors. And then I decided, you know what? I've got to ship out of Durban, and I've got to go to Johannesburg and do my master's in AI. That was very short-lived. Okay. It was 3 months. I had a car load.
In AI? When? What year was this?
This was 2005.
Okay.
Yeah, so 2005, I started the master's. I was doing research on natural language. 3 months in, I was just like, I've got to pay for my car. Mm-hmm. I've got to pay for my student loan. I needed a little bit more money than a research assistant and doing my master's in AI. And I lost, like, I wanted to go back at software development. I mean, I used to code at night. No coffee, no Barocca. I didn't even know what it was. And then I started at Smartcall thereafter as a software developer, as a .NET software developer.
We had Bruce Paveley from the CIO of TimeBank on episode 1 of the show, and he told us about how he got into computers when he was a young kid, when his dad bought him a ZX81 computer, which he learned to code on. Do you have a similar story? Did you have a computer at home that you learned to program?
So I didn't. I only got exposed during high school. Okay. And then my dad saved up across the years and then bought us a computer at home. So then I used to code on that.
Okay. What was that, a PC or?
That was a PC. Mm-hmm. That was like a floppy disk kind of approach. And like, I'm not a hardware person. It was just give me the software. I'll write the code.
Okay.
I will show you that it works. And then I can't.
And it was then that you realized you have a passion for this.
I actually
subject.
Only, I did not get the computer before I started software development. It
oh,
was
wow.
after.
Oh, wow.
My maths teacher just sat us down and she said, computer science was just introduced in our high school. So went to a public school in Verulam, a very small town. And
I
she
know
said, mm. yeah. Mm. And then she said, she sat us down, a couple of students, and she says, you're good in mathematics. We've got a comp science lab. Why don't you take computer science? And she took us to the lab and she showed us this coding and the stuff you could do on it and this hello world. And I was like, this looks pretty cool. And that's how I fell in love with it.
Okay.
And then my dad allowed me to choose it, even though he wanted me to go into accounting, and never looked back since then.
So did you start programming in .NET? Or?
No, I studied in Java.
Java.
So okay. I had to learn the fundamentals. So I did C++, Java, object-oriented programming. At high school, I did Pascal. I did all the fundamentals behind everything that I'm supposed to do. And that's how my career started. Okay. I finished university on Java. My honors was... my honors project was a voice-activated banking system. So it was actually using IBM's technology where I programmed it to be able to be a voice-activated system. But I then moved into the world as a .NET developer.
Okay.
So I didn't. I left. Let go of Java, and then I went in and did .NET at SmartCall.
Okay. Yes. SmartCall. SmartCall is a cellular service provider.
Yes, it's the Vodacom service provider.
That's right. Yes. SmartCall Cellular.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about them. They're not around anymore.
They're still around.
Oh, they're still around. Okay.
Yes, they're still around. But I did many things there as a developer, BI developer, software developer. I used to do support. I used to fix the printers.
Okay.
There was DBA, many things.
Okay.
Overnight support.
Okay.
The works.
Okay. Okay. And you were there for about 4 years.
Yes.
And then you joined Investec.
Yes.
How did that opportunity come along and what was your first role at the bank?
So it's a funny story. I never understood what it meant when I was younger that people leave leaders. And at SmartCall, my leader left to start his own company called FlickSwitch. His name is Keir Snyders.
Oh, no, FlickSwitch, okay.
Yes, yeah. So small. and I really looked up to Keir. He gave me opportunities. He built me up. I studied my MCSD when I was at SmartCall as well. And he left to start FlickSwitch. And then I just found it easier. I just said, you know what, I need to get back into the go back into the market. I knew some people at Investec. Mm-hmm. They spoke about this premiumness. I didn't know anything about the culture. And then I loved to wear suits.
Okay.
So I was just like, you know what?
Join the bank.
You know, I was like, let me apply. But I applied to many companies. I managed to get in as a software developer and joined the dazzle of zebras in 2008.
Okay. Yes. In what capacity?
I was a software developer. Okay. I started in the CIB business, corporate and institutional banking space. Mm-hmm. I was there for 7.5 years. Did coding, again, in .NET. Took on multiple roles as well. So I was a software developer. I was a solutions architect. I was a BI lead. I was a testing lead. I think I mentioned I was a solutions architect. I moved around the bank as well as the head of risk, head of central services, head of private banking, tech. Wow. All in the tech space, so I got good exposure all over, and also more than one role at a time. So it gave me a lot of stretch, a lot of growth, and then today I'm the CIO for Specialist Bank South Africa.
Okay, great. What do you see as the role of a CIO in a modern organization like Investec? I mean, what does your day-to-day job entail, and what do you see as the most important role of a CIO in an organization like a bank?
So let me start off by saying that, you know, a CIO can't be one-dimensional, so it's not all about technology. And I think it's important to be able to come in with a different lens. You know, when I went and did my executive program at Harvard, I walked in as a technologist, but I walked out as a business leader.
Mm-hmm.
So having a view and a perspective, not just of technology, how to innovate, how to put in new business models, how to change, but also have a lens of risk, have a lens of commerciality, have a lens of operations, have a lens of compliance, what all of that means in conjunction with each other. And as a technologist, we always talk about T-shaped people. Well, the bottom of the T is my technology experience, but the top of the T has to be many things, from risk to finance to many other things. Strategy, all of those things become really, really important. And having that full view as a CIO, I think, is really, really, really important in our roles. I think being in the financial services industry is already a demand in itself. It is, the reality is that it allows for capital and liquidity movement. It's a money movement for trade, investment, businesses, organization. It's the building of wealth. And I think from a GDP perspective, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about 15% of the contributor to GDP. So it runs, it's part of the national economy.
Mm-hmm.
If it fails, the economy fails, as an example. So we see ourselves as very systemic in this environment. So holding that role as a CIO in the financial sector is really important. That's why risk becomes important while you're innovating at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think working towards your question around the fact that, you know, the modern piece, there's a lot of technology that advances, and people keep saying, you know what, the buzzwords around artificial intelligence, what's happening there, cloud, what's happening there. But having a holistic approach in terms of your role is critically important whenever you're putting any technology change in place. I think keeping up with it is very hard, and I think it will continue to be hard because it's just changing at a fast pace.
Mm.
But there's many opportunities at the same time, despite the challenges that you face. You just need to know how to approach it.
Are there specific things that a bank CIO has to do that a CIO in a different organization, another industry, doesn't? Are there specific pressures? Are there specific, I'm not sure what word I'm looking for. Are there specific issues that a bank CIO has to deal with that another industry doesn't?
Well, I guess if you look at the context of the business and because it's money movement, you have to consider many things. So depending on the business that you are in, the role has to consider the risks and the opportunities as part of that. So let's swap into a different industry, right? So let's take the health industry. The business is about saving lives. Mm. So the technology you put in has to be able to fulfill that purpose of saving lives. And that return of investment has to be connected to that. Now, if I pull us back into the financial services industry and I look at my role in the context of the economy and the movement of money and, you know, trading and investing and wealth management, etc., all of that pieces, I have to look in that context. But I do think there's an important aspect around the purpose of the organization. And how do you unfold that purpose is really important. If the health industry's purpose is about saving lives, our purpose at Investec specifically centered around creating enduring worth. So moving away from shareholder value to stakeholder value. So look at all the stakeholders in the value chain and fulfill that purpose whenever you put change in. I think you have different risks and different opportunities in each of the industries. And it does depend on the purpose of the organization around how you do things. Mm. Because you can put technology in anywhere, in any industry, but you always have to center yourself back to the purpose of what you are doing. So in our case, how do we take a technology change into our environment, considering the fact that our stakeholders are not just our clients, our employees, our society, our regulator, as an example. You know, when we're putting in a change of AI, I have to consider that I abide by the policies. Mm. I can innovate for the client, absolutely, and I can give them the world-class experience, but am I, you know, abiding by the policy of privacy, as an example, from the regulator side of things?
It's a very regulated industry.
Absolutely regulated.
It has to be.
It's tight controlled. Mm. Am I managing fraud effectively as I should be, knowing that AI can actually predict some of these things and falsely predict some of these things, mm-hmm. but also positively predict some of these things? How am I managing that? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean for the society as well? We know that carbon footprint is high on some of these technologies like blockchain, and you've got green tech, many things like that. But what is the right thing in the context of the country that we are living in, together with the context of the organization that we are also participating in? And how does that roll up to the purpose? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's important.
For sure. What in your view makes what qualities make a good CIO in your view? What do you need to be an effective leader in IT?
So I think that I'll go back to the fact that you need to be very well-rounded in your approach and your thinking. I speak about the fact that you need to understand commerciality, risk, strategy, technology, many aspects that you have to take in making your decision. I think there's a large part of a CIO needs to be very much as a beacon, so being a visionary. Mm-hmm. Being able to articulate that vision is critically important because you have to enroll people in that vision. And you are the beacon, great, but you also have to be the architect. So yes, you have this beautiful vision, but if you look at architecting your organization into achieving that vision, we very much centered around culture and people. So you've got to take this triangle of people, culture, and the organizational hardware, and you've got to look at that in conjunction with each other and where the push and pulls are. So, for example, because I don't want to talk theoretical, for example, if you're going to put an AI change in, like I'm talking a lot about AI because, I mean, that's relevant right now.
Sure.
But, I mean, if you want to put in an AI change in place, what does it mean for the organization from the people perspective? Like, you want to put in Copilot in order to be able to increase your productivity and your quality, as an example, right? We know that costs are a big thing. So instead of hiring up, look at how you increase the productivity and the quality of your existing people. Great ask. Use Copilot, streamline your work, increase your productivity by stretching some of the cognitive load to artificial intelligence on Copilot and work with you. But do your people, and now work on this triangle around the architect, do your people have the critical analysis skills, as an example? Because it's not about taking the result at face value around what Copilot gives you or the assistance that you put in place gives you. You have to analyze whether the answer is correct or not. You have to be able to be that pragmatic. That's the people. On the culture side, you've got to look at the behaviors. Okay, so I'm using an assistant to be able to support me in order to increase my productivity, but is my behavior lulling? Am I taking like the approach where I feel comfortable? Am I being complacent? Am I just taking the answer? What is the behavior? How is the behaviors changing in the organization that I have to monitor as part of the culture? And then the last piece is around the organizational hardware, which is your systems and your structures. Okay, so what performance metrics do I need to now put in place? How do I measure based on outcomes? Because I've just put something in, I'm testing whether my I'm putting an assistant in, I'm testing whether my people have the competency of critical analysis skills to be able to question the answer that it's giving me, and then what's happening to behavior on the culture, and then how am I measuring that with my performance piece? So just connected that whole triangle together just with one change in the organization. And then the other part that I'd also say is that there's a balance that a CIO needs to be able to hold in terms of their skills is how to innovate, how to operationally run the environment, as well as strategically drive business change all at the same time. So you've got to be a hype filter. You have to. I mean, there's hype in everything that we do. You've got to be a hype filter.
Especially in tech.
Absolutely. So, and then you've got to look at value-based technology initiatives. It's really important. As well as be an integrator all at the same time, because it's a complex adaptive system. Mm-hmm. There are multiple systems at play. There's the organization, there's the country, there's the regulator, there's the policymakers, there's your employees. There's so many systems at play at this complex adaptive system that you've got to, how do you actually plan this? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to be a catalyst. And being a catalyst is enough, mm-hmm. and not plan it. Mm-hmm. So that's the other piece.
What should be the relationship between the CIO and the rest of the C-suite in the organization, including the CEO? And how much of a role do you think the CIO should play in setting organizational strategy?
Well, it's a fundamental component around, the world is changing and it's centered around technology. It's becoming the driving force of many things.
It's changing banking.
It's changing banking. It's changing every industry, actually. And I think what's important is that you have a voice in the conversation. But I think there is a role that the CIO needs to play in bringing that holistic view into the table, not just a one-dimensional view of just technology and the innovation. Mm. And that means that being part of a C-suite, you have to be interchangeable with one another. So you have to be a risk officer, you have to be a compliance officer, you have to be a CIO, you have to understand the commercials and the revenue side of things. So you have to be able to be interchangeable and have one conversation. And instead of just, I mean, like, I'm a technologist. I love the fancy new stuff and dabbling and playing and stuff. But being in a bank, which is a systemic bank, you've got to consider the impact of what you are doing, not just the change and the benefit. You've got to consider everything altogether.
I imagine you spend a lot of your time, and when I say you, I mean CIOs generally, spend a lot of time educating other people in the organization about new technologies and how they could impact the organization for the better.
Yes.
Do you find that's a big role in your portfolio? Do you spend a lot of time almost evangelizing about what's coming down the line and how this might be able to change things at the bank?
So we do that. I think that our executives are open, but there also has to be a realist approach to certain things. Mm-hmm. If you introduce too much of evangelism in the space, too much of change, what does that provoke? Does it provoke an organization that rebels, an organization of anxiety, an organization of adaptability? And there's a fine balance between all of that. I don't think that our organization is not open to change. I think with any change comes a process around how do you see it? Where does the value come? How to be able to use it and enroll the people as part of the process? Part of my role is to be able to influence. It's very important. And there's an art to influence as well. Mm. And it's not about the tell. It's about how do you enroll people as part of that. The evangelizing side of things, I think we hold a lot of context in terms of the technology change that is happening, whether it's in many aspects, Web 3.0, or whether it's in new technology, whether it's in artificial intelligence. People are receptive to hear it. But executing on that change doesn't take one individual. It takes multiple individuals. Mm. Mm-hmm. So conversations have to happen around what is the value. And that, very importantly, remove the hype.
Mm. Let's talk a bit about some of the big projects that Investec's busy with at the moment, to the extent that you're able to share information about what you're doing. What are some of the big IT projects that are on your plate at the moment, and how do those tie in with Investec's strategic direction?
So we call them key initiatives. We do a lot in our space.
Maybe highlight one or two of them for us.
I'll talk particularly about one area, and that's actually I'll talk about two parts. They're connected to each other. So you'll hear one of our leaders, Diren, talk about business transactional banking and increasing our market share there. We started in that business a couple of years ago, and we're seeing great progress. Mm-hmm. The mid-market segment is where we're delving into. It's really important for us, and it's connected back to our purpose. So everything's always connected back to our purpose. We see the mid-market segment as driving economic growth, creating jobs. You'll hear him talk about that. So it's really important for us to service that mid-market segment. And in so doing, we looked at a holistic approach in terms of our offering for business transactional banking. For transactional capability, for FX capability, for lending capability, for investment capabilities. How do we offer this holistic offering? I do want to stress that technology doesn't work in isolation of the business. So it's hard for me to just talk about the tech. It's Sure. important for me to talk it rolled up into the offering that we want to give our clients. Mm-hmm. And we keep reminding ourselves we are the business. So as part of that offering, there are certain things that need to be put in place. We want to scale that business, so we've put in payments rails. Mm-hmm. We want to introduce FX to that customer base. We've put in FX. And so it involves multiple pieces of change to give a holistic offering, which we have done. What we are doing is, how do we innovate in that now, as an example? How do we scale that even more as our business scales? So talking about cloud technology, well, actually not talking about it, executing on the cloud technology. So our payment rails for PayShap actually is being used here, and that sits in the cloud. So we are leveraging cloud technology already. As an example, we expanding on our API strategy in the business transactional banking space as well. We allow for API connectivity to these mid-sized corporates. Mm-hmm. And we're saying, you know what, we noticed that you want to create operational efficiency on your side, so rather plug into us using our APIs direct to direct. Via an API gateway, though. So I don't want to say point-to-point, but via APM, Microsoft API gateway. So we allow for that connectivity. And then we've got the APIs, we've got the payments, we've introduced FX. Now, how do we evolve that? How do we scale that? How do we innovate on that? Some of the things I can't share.
Sure.
But that's a key focus for us in order to increase our market share.
Okay.
At the same time, I just like to expand on the payments piece. So the payments piece, we know that industry is changing very, very, very fast around us. And I think there's a model that explains that with PayShap, with the instant payments, we're live on that with our new rails. We're doing instant payments. But there's many things that are also changing around that. That's in cloud. It's very important to understand that it allows for the scale, the transactional capability of scale, payments in and out. But there's a piece around payments that specifically talks to a model that talks to how do you adopt, how do you trial, and how do you assess? Mm-hmm. We are in the adopt and trial and not in the assess. So what do I mean by that? Adopt and trial is adopt. We use cloud technology already. We've got open APIs. For us, for our API strategy, we've got secure open APIs for our clients in the business transactional banking space. We've got a programmable card. It's also via APIs. And if you don't have a software developer, we've got spreadsheet banking around our API strategy. So we use that as part of our strategic offering. And then on the trial pieces, we participate in the blockchain in the industry. So as part of, you know, Project Kolka, we actually participate as part of trial using blockchain so that we're ready. But the assess piece is not where we're playing. So I know that Brix Pay, article came out a couple of days ago around using blockchain there as well for BRICS countries. Now, because we're using blockchain already, if that does come, we can participate in it. But we don't play around in CDBCs, and there's Gen AI payments, which not much is happening, so I don't know.
Gen AI payments.
So I was like, okay, but like, what's happening here? Well, nothing's really happening here right now, but that's part of the assess in the future. So we're not playing there. we've got to take a risk culture as well.
I'm interested in what you say about it, opening up APIs for various applications. Is that part of the whole concept of open banking?
So what we do is, so open banking is part of the PSD2. So we do have, we do fulfill PSD2 in the UK.
What is that?
It's a regulatory framework in order to be able to open up your banking system for fintechs to be able to use. So it's PSD2. So we allow for that in our UK business. But I want to bring it back home and talk about our API strategy specifically. So our API strategy is centered around external as well as on internal. On the external side is to be able to connect to our mid-sized corporates and allow them API connectivity to be able to pull transactions on real time through their ERP systems. Okay. It creates efficiency for them as part of their process. So they can just bring in the transactions and do real-time financial reporting as an example.
Okay.
So we allow that through APIs. So that's part of our business transactional banking offering. And the second part of our external APIs, what we also offer is a programmable card. So we believe that technologists are the future segment that's going to drive economic growth, and we bank them. But can we give them an offering that makes it exciting? So we've got a programmable card, and we offer that to our client base as well, and we bank those technology professionals. But you can actually program the card. You can say, actually, these cards should, because we've also got a virtual card, should have a limit of 1,000, and you could only shop at Woolworths, as an example.
Okay.
So you can actually program it. How we've advanced that, because we've got, how we're advancing that, also looking at the controls, is that we're experimenting right now with sort of actually more exploring than experimenting, low-code, no-code. So we've got a low-code, no-code solution called spreadsheet banking, but I just want to change the topic slightly towards the ability to be able to write the code using a GPT assistant that we keep tightened within our rails to be able to write the code and deploy the code for you. So you actually don't need to know how to write the code.
So an AI does it for you.
Yes. So we're exploring that at the moment. And we've got that in our environment to see how you could take and change the game in the API space.
Okay.
Then we've got the internal APIs because we're an API first bank. And what we do there is we want to be able to secure the connectivity of software systems to our platforms, not point to point, meaning software to software. So we've got these platforms with a number of systems. We want the system to be able to talk to the platform via an API gateway. So that's our internal. And that wrapping of the APIs in our state allows for a future, possible future, where you could have commodity services that could be monetized, as an example. So I do believe that there are services in the future in banking that would be probably commoditized.
Like, for example?
So, like, let's say you want to become a market maker on price, as a price maker in the market for FX.
Okay.
You could offer FX as a commodity service to another bank, to another provider who wants to go use your FX services capabilities, to fintechs out there that wants to use your fintech, use your FX services capabilities. So that becomes a standalone API, and you and it's secure, and you could monetize that as well. We don't monetize anything for right now. Our value is to our clients because that's really important to us. It's critically important for us. But that commodity service space, I do think, is where banking may go. I know we've got marketplaces with other players in this area already, but we're not a marketplace.
Let's return just for a moment to the conversation. I mean, you've clearly done a lot of work at Investec on AI. Let's return to the subject just briefly. What do you think it's going to mean for ordinary bank customers in a couple of years from now? What is AI actually going to bring to the party for consumers, ordinary Investec
clients?
Yeah.
It's a very interesting question because there's so much every single day about artificial intelligence and how it could change the world. And then on the other side, you read about all the challenges. But if I have to center it around the client and the client experience, I think there's massive value. Look, I want to take a step back a little bit. Because we're talking about artificial intelligence in the sense that it wasn't there and it was always there. We already use predictive and prescriptive modeling already in today's world. And I mean, we use it in risk management. We use it in, you know, personalization. We use it in suspicious activity monitoring. Many people use it. We already use it in those spaces. Whether it's linear regression, time series calculations, Monte Carlo simulations, whatever the case, we already use it in the bank. And lots of banks already use it. But I think where the game changes are in the fact that Gen AI has democratized artificial intelligence to a point where it's just easy to use it. And it's predicting new content, new data. Mm-hmm. It's able to consume a lot of the unstructured, like your voice, your text, and bring it all together and analyze it in a very fast pace and give you an answer that is highly likely, probably, maybe correct or not. Fact or fiction, I don't know. You saw it went like a convoluted way there. Because we don't know sometimes whether it's fact or fiction, yeah. Fiction, because it sounds
it hallucinates.
So real, 100%. Mm. It sounds so real. But, and I think I want to hone in on the Gen AI piece, mm-hmm. rather than the predictive and the prescriptive model side of things. Because that is going to continue. But what I'd like to focus on as a generative AI, I think client experiences will change. I think the mechanisms in which you interact with your app or online or anything will all change from mm-hmm. a client experience perspective. That will be one of the fundamentals. I'll just talk to my Apple Watch and just tell mm-hmm. it, please, can you pay someone as an example? But there've got to be certain controls in place in order for that to work functionally correct.
Yeah.
These models have risk in itself. And I know there's lots of databases, like there's an MIT database, et cetera, with the models and the risks that it has with itself. And we've got to be very cognizant of those model risks. Mm-hmm. It's also not trained yet as well. We've got to train it. I mean, Benjamin Rosman spoke to us recently about training these models. And many conversations I hear about African data being trained in these models and what do they mean, understanding the context, et cetera. But I think from a client experience perspective, it is going to change. I think on a fraud is another key thing that the client is going to benefit from mm-hmm. because fraud is on an uprise because this technology is actually being used because it's democratized to be able to create more fraud. Mm. And what's happening is because the industry is changing so fast as well, you've got multiple interaction points that the client faces the bank. You've got the app, you've got web, you've got web, which is online. You've got APIs now, is our channel. You've got the bank, you've got the bankers, you've got the support center. You've got different modalities. You've got voice, you've got text, you've got many things, mm-hmm. right? And then you've got all these interaction points, different modalities, or different channels, different modalities. And then you've got different, let's take payments. As an example, you'll have EFT, you'll have card, you have digital payments, whatever that landscape changes to, and it'll keep evolving. What Gen AI can do is it can bring all of those modalities, all of those channels, and all of those payment capabilities together to find patterns in your fraud. Mm. So it changes the game completely from a fraud perspective. There's a Gartner analyst, Pete Redshaw, talks about Reg 2.0. And he said it's an like regulatory technologies, and it's sort of like forgotten on the wayside. And actually, it should I strongly agree with him that it should be on the front of your mind right now around how you enhance the regulatory technology. So, from a client benefit perspective, whilst you're dealing with fraud, it helps the client indirectly because you're dealing with someone's wealth. It's their hard earned money.
You have to protect it. You have to number predict. One responsibility at the end of the
client
day.
Expects trust.
Yeah.
The regulator expects a risk culture. The client expects trust. So client experience, fraud, it can even predict, it'll probably at some point predict which new channels you need to introduce in your environment. Mm. It's the newness about it. It's the new data. Mm. It's the new patterns. It's all of that that benefits you.
You had me at talking to my watch. Pay Shabana R1,000.
Yes.
That does it.
Yes. So look, the it's going to be very, I think the future, I have a view that the future of banking is going to be, I mean, at Investec, we pride ourselves in our relationships. It's absolutely critical to us. Mm-hmm. I need to know who Duncan is. We can't lose that. And we won't lose that. So I believe that we'll integrate the relationship with the digitally powered. It's an integration. It's not mutually exclusive. Mm. It's reinforcing, actually. And experiences will feel that way. So I will know more using the power of co-intelligence to be able to understand my client better. not to give them new products, but to understand their need and offer what they need.
And make it more convenient.
And make it more convenient. So the convenience will change. The engagement will change. It'll just be at a whole new level, actually. The experience will change. I mean, we talk about hyper-personalization.
What's it going to look like for consumers, though? Is it going to be a chatbot that you interact with? Is it just going to be a seamless experience?
I think you'll always have... So in an integrated experience, you'll always have the human in that relationship. And I envision an experience, and it's very, like, it might be too far-fetched, it might not be, maybe it's already happening, I don't know. But I think that you'll probably know more about the client and when he needs to do some, he or she needs to do something before the client knows when he or she needs to do something. I'm submitting my tax forms. I can already submit it on your behalf. I'll know the SARS deadline. I know you own a corporate. I know you're an individual. I know the deadlines. I've done your tax forms for you. I can notice that on an individual basis, you know, you need to put more in your, I don't know, your pension or whatever the case is, your provident funds, because you're spending on too much of tax. Let me do it. Let me suggest all of these things. I was like, that would be an amazing world.
That would be cool.
Very
cool.
That would
be cool. How is AI going to impact productivity in the bank, and what does it also mean for jobs?
I'm gonna use what I said earlier around the fact that we, as technologists or CIOs, also have to consider the context of the country that you operate in. I know our unemployment is sitting at 33.5%. And I know that the rest of the world, and I think it's in one of the books that I read about, I forgot the author, it escapes me right now, but he talks about the next decade and how Africa is the only growing population. But the rest of the world is dwindling on population. So if you look at the rest of the world, AI will benefit them because they have a dwindling population. You'd have a different experience. Maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But then if you look at the context of South Africa on that 33.5% of unemployment rate, like, what should we be doing there, knowing that the future skill set is centered around artificial intelligence or in cloud engineering, as an example? Like, what are the things that we need to consider on that base? But I think from a productivity, that's a skills piece of it. But from a productivity perspective, I think, you know, Ethan Mollick talks about the fact that we're going to live in a co-intelligent world. And the reality is that there's a deep focus using collective intelligence to increase your productivity and your quality distribution curves. And it's all about how do you use the assistants, how do you use the co-pilots, and you still have to, you have a role to still play in using that technology, though. So I can have an assistant that's reading all the policies that are going to come out, because we're going to have more and more regular policies coming out because of technology changing so fast. To be able to understand all the policies, give me a summary of the policies and tell me what I need to do. But I still need to understand it. Like, it doesn't mean I'm just going to accept it at face value. I'm still going to be able to critically analyze what it gives me. I'd use the same example for coding as well. I mean, there's Devin, right? So I don't know if you know about Devin, but Devin can code for you, right? So it's an assistant that codes for you. And similarly, you can use GitHub Copilot to be able to code for you as well. But are we going to lose the fundamentals of what I learned, as an example, in object-oriented programming? Like, will I just accept the code that it gives me? Or will I have to understand the code that it's given me, that it doesn't have any security loopholes in order to put it in play? What does maintenance of that code base mean going for that individual that is using Copilot? So those are the things you have to consider. So your role is changing. Absolutely, it is going to be integrated into everything that we're doing. I agree with that. The assistants, the copilots, however, whatever term we use on it, it's going to be integrated. How your role changes is going to change. But it also is, and like, what's the measure of productivity here? How do we measure? And it's a bit like, I'm like, okay, where do I sit on this? How do I measure the productivity? Is it time it's taken to code? Or time it's taken to code, to analyze, to test, as well as put it into the environment and to maintain that. Like, my understanding, I still have to understand what code I'm putting in. So there's so many aspects, but, you know, you could use it for coding, you could use it for understanding policies, you could use it for, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. We went to South African voting. Mm-hmm. What we did was, and it was, you know, because of the hallucination, we needed to tighten it, so we only kept it to our staff. What we did was, we've got Zebra GPT in our environment, so we took the a GPT model from Microsoft, and we actually put it in our own Rails, and we tightened it to ourselves because it's secure. We're a bank. We don't want leakage of information. We want a controlled environment. And our philosophy is very important. It's centered around the fact that you want to explore, experiment, and exploit. So you have a bunch of hypotheses. You want to be able to come up with them. You want to experiment and prove the hypotheses, whichever one. And then you want to exploit the one that you know is going to add you value. So what we did was we took the... it's a more of a pragmatic example. So because we're doing a lot of experimentation, we took the manifestos, and we put it into Zebra GPT, and we contained it and we called it a voting assistant, mm-hmm. and we gave it to our staff and we tightened it. So we gave it a role. We said you can't stretch out into. You've got to keep within your own rails, mm-hmm. And there's terms and conditions of using it, but with the objective for our staff to be able to understand the manifestos and compare the manifestos across political parties.
Fascinating.
That's just to understand it. Mm-hmm. That's all. But it's still an employee or our staff's responsibility to be able to understand what it means and to say, okay, have these parties really executed on them, as an example? Mm. So it's not detracting from their responsibility. It's just sort of creating a platform for them to be able to consume information in a very different way than going through hundreds of pages of documents. Ask it questions, as simple as that.
Yes.
That's what we did, as an example.
We're talking about very advanced technologies here. But I think I must bring it back, the conversation back a little bit, because banks, and I don't know what your technology stack looks like. Maybe give us a brief overview of this. But I know banks tend to have a lot of legacy systems. A lot of banks here are still running mainframes. They hire COBOL developers. There's a lot of legacy there. There's a lot of middleware to try and get that legacy to talk to these new applications like AI, for example. But I don't have insight into Investec. What does your technology stack look like, and how does it compare to other banks in South Africa? And then maybe allied to that, maybe talk a bit about, you've mentioned you've moved somewhat to the cloud. Maybe just give us some context to that and your views of cloud computing and what you're doing in that space.
Okay. So I think it's easier for me to be able to explain the tech stack maybe in a different way. So we've got a regulatory tech stack. Mm-hmm. So our capital, our compliance, our risk, so our balance sheet risk systems, etc. We've got enterprise shared platforms that's actually used across the bank as well. So for example, our payments rails, our client, our data, our integration stack. Then we've got the stack that actually what we call, what I call the financial value stack. So basically the products, so where the products actually sit. So we've got that stack. So your treasury, your trading, your lending portfolios, your transactional capabilities, like our card systems, our cash investments and treasury systems, all of those. And then we've got the channels, mm-hmm. which is our APIs, our app, our web. And our client servicing center technology as well, because we've got voice biometrics as an example in our stack, which we, for our client support center, as well as many other technologies that our CSE uses and our bankers actually use as well. So, I mean, if I have to explain the stacks, that how it works. But to your question around legacy, our preference is not to call it legacy.
Okay.
Because it was fit for purpose before, and it's now not fit for purpose. So there are things that you have to modernize as part of the approach. As your business evolves, as the technology evolves, so do you need to evolve that base. Mm-hmm. And we have a view around our vision statement, which is basically to create a personalized client experience and digitalize and scalable business by digitalizing our DNA. It is really important, that statement, mm-hmm. because that is linked to our strategic objectives. And what we do is we look at what are the components we need to change in order to drive the scale. What are the components we need to change in order to make strategic use of data? What are the components that we need to take to change in order to get speed of execution? What are the components we need to change in order to drive towards the growth mindset of our business, as well as manage the cost discipline in terms of our strategic objectives, as well as share across geographies together with sharing across business areas? So our preference is not to say that there's legacy and we heavy weighted on legacy, but what are the things that we need to change? And is it incremental or is it exponential? And what are the risks if it's incremental or exponential? Mm-hmm. Or is there a middle ground? And how do we accelerate some of these pieces as well? So, and look, do you want me to answer the cloud question?
Please do, yes.
So, I mean, let's just take a step back in terms of our approach, and I'll go back to that vision statement around creating a personalized client experience and scalable business by digitalizing our DNA. Mm-hmm. I'll speak about four things in terms of our approach as being a functional area, being technology, as well as a federated area, being horizontal across business areas. Because there's two key things here, functional approach, which is embedded in each of the business areas as part of the horizontal, but also each of the divisional areas also want to drive their own growth strategies that meet the six strategic objectives of our bank. So it feels like a matrix. Let's talk about the functional area. So in technology, I'll talk about four things. That client experience is absolutely critical for us. The end game is to make sure that it's slick, it's intimate, and it's out of the ordinary, actually. It's personalized mm-hmm. because it's who we are. And we'll use data to be able to do that. It's very important, which we've already done. And that's where the predictive and the prescriptive side comes in. The second piece is our cloud journey. And I'll spend a couple of moments there. Because our cloud journey is we've got a software as a service strategy. We got a platform as a service strategy. And it's critical and vital for us to enable the scalability of our organization to get the pace that we want to need, the elasticity that we want to need, that we need to be able to use the modern technology in order to be able to enable the business of the tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But what we've done is in our PaaS journey, maybe I should start off by saying our principle is the following. What is commodity, we will lease. What is differentiating, we will build. Our client experience is differentiating, so we will build. Mm-hmm. That's key to our strategy. So what we've done in the cloud space is we've integrated in our PaaS journey our modernization piece as well. Deloitte talks about the integration of cloud and modernization to modernize your estate or your foundation at the same time take advantage of your scale opportunities. So we've done that. Now, it could feel, so basically what that means is that we've got some of these systems might be monolithic. So we're trying to drive towards a composable architecture. Mm-hmm. So very distributed architecture. So these monolithic applications need to be smaller pieces so that you can rent and assemble and plug and play. That's the gist of it. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So that work is being done with the cloud work at the same time. So we're building in our PaaS journey in that way. It doesn't mean it's a fixed strategy, though, from a cloud perspective. We will continuously look at how do we accelerate that cloud journey. And there'll be different mechanisms of doing that. But the end game, scale, user experience, enabling the growth of the business of tomorrow while still maintaining a risk culture. Because I think there is an aspect around cost and the CapEx becomes very real in the OpEx side. So mm-hmm. it's in your face now. So something that sat on the balance sheet before and sweat the asset over 3 to 5 years is now very much in your face. So we've got to continuously learn as part of this approach. There are standards that are changing. It's a mindset change. It's the way you code changes, all of that. Mm. But there are other mechanisms that we'll explore to accelerate cloud specifically. The other two things was the API. I think I've referred to that, the internal strategy and the external strategy. And you mentioned that people actually are talking about AI and introduction of AI. But like there's an Gen A. So the OpenAI API endpoints can now be put into an API gateway. Which is exactly what we want, so that people can interact with those APIs via a gateway. So mm-hmm. it's secure, because sometimes you don't know where authorization and authentication is actually happening, mm-hmm. and you need a control mechanism as part of it. So those APIs living in APIM, it's APIM, I think you know what I mean, mm-hmm. Actually gives us that control environment and governance that we need. So we've got the internal, we have the external, and then the last piece is around the data piece. Now, it's really important for us, when we sat down, we said, well, if our architecture is moving from this monolithic to quite distributed, why is our data still thinking about the same methodology of it being data warehouse, massive data warehouses, or data massive data lakes? There's a Martin Fowler article that we refer to that talks about distributed data mesh. We use that in our space. So it's actually building a water garden, smaller data lakes, but ultimately building a data product at the end of the day. So fraud can become a data product, as an example. And how do you reuse this water garden of data lakes in order to be able to build up the data products? And we want to create this distribution of data. So we Martin Fowler calls it the distributed data mesh. That's four things.
I have some reading to do. Shawana, it would be remiss of me not to conclude the conversation by asking you a bit about cybersecurity, because that is top of mind across industries, but in financial services, I think it's a particular focus area. Is that something that's looked after by someone else in the C-suite, or does it fall under your portfolio?
So we have a CISO, and he's a top-notch. I mean, it's really important that you get the best of the best in your organization to manage security. And it's not just on cybersecurity. So it's the both the insider threat as well as the external threat. So when we look at security, it's both inside and external. And underneath, he's got ISO, so information security officers, pen testers. So that model works in that way, and many other other people underneath him. So he actually looks after the practice. I don't look after it. But it's important for me as the CIO to understand the SecDevOps pieces.
Yes.
Because we have to think security first now, not a DevSecOps kind of approach. So we're always constantly thinking about security. And, you know,
new product development as well,
absolutely.
I imagine. It must be critical.
Deep fakes, it's very real, very real. And that's advancing too as well because of generative AI. And I don't know if you saw WormGPT, but like WormGPT can write an email like it's so real as an example. So you've got, like, he's like on top of his game, needs to be able to understand what is happening in industry. There's synthetic IDs now. It takes a real ID and it takes a fake ID and it creates a new ID that is a new person that will be on board, that could be onboarded as an individual in a system to open up an account. How would we ever know that it's actually a fake ID, as an example? So, like, these advancements are so fast. I mean, even with voice biometrics, you've got deep fakes there as well. What's real and what's not? There are mechanisms to analyze all of that. So our CISO, look, he's pretty amazing. He sits independent. He sits at a group level. He's got to look after the UK as well as South Africa. And he's, you should talk to him, actually. He's a good storyteller.
Okay, good. We'll get him on the show at some point. sounds good. One of the challenges that organizations are facing, though, is finding security skills. I mean, it's not only security. It's across the board in IT. But security is particularly impacted. How does Investec attract and retain the best talent? How do you approach that?
I would say, some people may say it's a cheesy answer, but it's our culture, actually, is our retention mechanism. I do think there are multiple mechanisms across technology as a whole, though. So it's being able to look at it, because it's not only to service Investec, but it's to service the economy of South Africa and bring us as a hub to be able to become attractive talent to the world, as an example. So at a school level, what are we doing? And we go into schools. We also focus on the foundational element of technology skills, which is mathematics. We believe that mathematics is critical for any role, actually, not just for technology. But remember when I started, my computer science teacher spoke to us and said, you guys are good in mathematics. Why don't you do computer science? It's new, et cetera. So we focus on those foundational skills around mathematics, very, very important at school level. We focus around exposing students to, our tech talent days in order to understand what technology could do for them, what a career could mean for them, to be able to create, you know, this inspirational curiosity, if you want to call it, around technology. Then at a university level, what we do is we have career days as well. We have learnership programs. We have graduate programs, all at that level as well. And then within the organization, it's about the retention. Now we've created all of this talent, we bring them in, it's about retention. It's also about taking the learnership, giving them commercial experiences, put them back into the industry. It's growing this economy more and more. In terms of our diversity, inclusion, and belonging, it is central to our culture. It's part of our value system. It's critically important to us. Sumantra Ghoshal talks about discipline, trust, support, and stretch. Those four things are fundamental to our culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we build people, how we grow people, how we don't have over-the-wall syndrome kind of aspects in what we do. You become well-rounded. You get exposed. It's probably the reason why I'm still there for 16 years because I learn every day. And it feels like a stretch.
Yeah.
I feel the growth. I'm not on adrenaline all the time. But when it's like, when I am, it's like you're in the zone mm-hmm. and you get exposure to everything, actually. So it's to be able to build at the systemic pieces, so in the beginning of the chain, and to be able to retain, very much centered around a culture. And we're a work-hard culture, mm-hmm. but also a very motivational, play-hard culture as well.
Okay.
We want to inspire you. Well, it's what we do.
Yeah. And yes. If you want to be in tech at the cutting edge, it sounds like Vestic's the place to be.
Absolutely, yes.
You're doing a lot of stuff I haven't even heard about before. So fascinating conversation. Thanks for coming into our studio and sharing some insight into what's happening at Investec from an IT perspective. Shabana Thaver is Chief Information Officer at Investec Specialist Bank. Thanks so much for being a guest on our show.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It was awesome.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.